This episode is brought to you in part by Wholehearted Love, a new book by Caleb and Stephanie Rouse. Overcome the barriers that hold you back in your relationships with God and with others, and delight in feeling safe, seen, and loved with Wholehearted Love. For more information, go to Tyndale.com.
You're listening to the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast. I'm your host, Krista Harden, and today we're talking about the 1-5 glow pairing and learning about harmonic groups. We are actually talking with Brittany Thomas from Enneagram Explained as she tells us about her 1-5 marriage, and she is so gifted with helping us to work through conflicts with the unique angle of the harmonic groups. You might have heard of harmony groups. You might have heard of harmonic groups. They're two different parts of the Enneagram, and we're going back to the rule of three that we always have these sets of three in our Enneagram work, whether it be triads, centers of intelligence. We just love our groups of three work. We love to balance out our subtypes, our instinctual variants, because this is a balanced life, right? If we're leaning super far into any one type or any one area, we get in trouble. So we're always learning from each other, taking in new sensory information, and really finding the best ways together. So this is what I'm super excited about, because obviously with marriage, communication and conflict are two of the biggest things I ever hear about. I know many of you have probably looked at conflict and security through the lenses before we did our Enneagram work of attachment styles and withdrawing attachment and secure attachment and anxious attachment. And that is amazing. And I think that's very important. And I would never want to lose out on all we've learned about trauma and how we can support one another. Always connection before correction. But what we really need to understand is we all have come to coping with stress and trauma in different ways. And what I love about Brittany is that she explains for us how this is done, generally speaking, with various personality types. So it's so nice to be able to say, okay, I'm a one, I'm in this group, this is how I deal with conflict. And then you can do your own investigative work as to the why you think that you developed in that way. And it might have been just personality, it might have been trauma-based, but either way, you feel most secure when you do this style. So the biggest thing is going to be showing love and attention to each other and trying to balance out with your two styles where you both feel the safest. And remembering that your style of feeling safe is going to be very nuanced to you, and your partner is going to be exactly the same way. So keep all of that in mind as she talks about the harmonic groups. And as you find yourself, you can also be thinking about it in terms of trauma, attachment style, but let's add this on so that we can even get a little more nuanced and a little less diagnostic-y with a spouse who gets offended with that kind of language. It's a little easier to say, this is something that we see as because I'm a four and you're an eight, versus I think you're bipolar. I've mentioned this a few times. Bipolar people tend to do this. It doesn't mean there's not another conversation for that, but when you're talking about conflict and you're already escalating, it's nice to be able to say, what's the language that's going to get through the walls, through the barriers of shame? So let's look at this with Brittany together. And of course, before that, I can't wait for you to hear about her couple glow so you can really get to understand what she and her spouse are like. And I hope you can not just take a peek in at her life. I know we love to investigate on this podcast, but also a peek into your own marriage and just being able to see what are our strengths, what are our areas for growth, and exploring your glow together too. So that should be fun. And then of course, don't forget to sign up if you want to do more couples work with me and talk a little bit more closely about attachment, a little bit more closely about the dynamics of couples work. There's a huge harvest for that, we know, with the COVID divorces this year. So please make sure to sign up at enneagramandmarriage.com if you're thinking about working with a couple. And let's dig right on in to getting to hear from Brittany at Enneagram Explained. If you're snoozing, come back to me. It is time to get into your glow. Hi, guys. I am so happy to have Brittany from Enneagram Explained with me. Hi, Brittany.
Hi.
She is a busy woman, and I know she's going to tell us all about herself, but you feel so special when you get invited into a 1-5 glow for a little bit, because this is an exclusive pairing, as we will soon talk about. They are classically brilliant together. And even as Brittany and I talk, I see her gorgeous classical book array behind her. So I am just like wowed, and I am so grateful. And Brittany, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So like you alluded to, I am a one, or a one wing nine to be a little bit more specific. And I am married to a wonderful type five husband. He is a pastor in Seattle, which is obviously very interesting. And it's very interesting as a one, because Seattle is not quite traditional in the sense of a one would like.
That's true.
So that's always been interesting. It's been very growing, which is a good thing for me. Mm-hmm. And the reason he's actually not here is because he is herding our children out the house so that you guys can actually hear this podcast. I mean, okay, as you would expect, a 1 and a 5 parent team, our kids are actually very well behaved, and we can, you know, keep the tones down because my five husband needs quiet and I need quiet. So they're actually very well behaved, but for the sake of podcast and absolute silence, we shut them out. We have 5 of them. So 5 kids, there's just a lot of noise.
That's amazing. And you look like you might not even have 1 kid. I cannot believe you have 5 kids. You are so blessed, woman.
We started very young. So, you know, we had all 5, and I'm only 36 now. So we're done and we're still super young.
Oh my gosh. That's beautiful. I'm so happy for you. What a blessing. And thank you for giving us your full attention. We are so grateful, because she is teaching us all about how to work through our conflicts and with our harmonic groups. So I can't wait for you to tell us about that. But I love hearing that you're in Seattle. I love that it challenges you as a one. And I think that you're right. That is a beautiful place that God has you guys, and you're homeschooling out there. And how's that going? I know everyone in Seattle is still homeschooling, but you are a homeschooler, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm a second gen homeschooler. So I was homeschooled and then brought that into the marriage. I was almost like one of my prerequisites, is that I needed this to happen. Thankfully my husband was on board. So yeah, we've been homeschooling. My oldest is 14. My youngest is 5. So they're all being homeschooled now. You know, we've been doing it long enough that it's a well-oiled machine, and it's all going good. A little bit more nerve-wracking as the oldest one is in high school, and we have to start thinking about graduating in college and stuff like that. That's new, scary. I need to get it right. One territory.
Yes. But I love that you are working hard for that, because it's going to pay off. When I talk to ones in my community about these levels, they're really doing their work to find out what's important. So I know you're doing that work. I know it's scary. I'm right there with you with my 15-year-old. And so we're doing this together. And I love that I met you, Brittany, on Instagram. And some people you do meet across the world or country through social media. So we're good examples of friends who met like that.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. This is a well overdue talking.
Yeah. We use words, but we're always writing. So this is a beautiful thing. And I also wanted to ask you how you and your hubby met, you and Justin.
We met technically at Bible college. We like to get out of the stereotype ring by spring MRS degree by saying we met during the summer break while we were working at Bible college. But we were still very much the statistic. So we met over break. I was completely clueless that he was into me and more serious about things. And I originally was not into him at all. He was not my type. Thankfully pursued that enough, I guess. He's a 5, but he, to dig into tri-types a little bit, he's a 5'8"3. And so the 8 actually really helps a lot in that department. So he was a little bit more initiative on that end. And so we did things in a very oddly Christian, maybe oddly one way of, you know, we decided we would pray about dating for a month before we started dating, which of course did not last the full month. And we started dating, but it was
really, so you are human.
It's Bible college. We were trying to be super spiritual, but it just doesn't last very long when you see each other every single day. But it was with the upfront understanding that if we're dating, we will be getting married. You know, I mean, unless something crazy came up while we were dating, but it was with this is the purpose of our dating, is to get married. And so we dated, did long distance dating, and got married within a year, I think. of meeting each other.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you're not the first 1-5 pairing that I've heard that from. So really? It's almost cookie cutter scary with some of the other
ones.
That's
so funny.
But it's beautiful because there's such an intentionality with that 1-5 pairing of saying like, I like you, let's be direct about this. And then I love how you said your hubby has the 5-8-3. So there's even more directness with him. So he was able to get through the walls.
Yeah. Much more direct in those steps and plans, very much more delayed. You know, I said, I love you way before he did. And he was super extra cautious with that between just the feelings and not wanting to make the same mistakes he had in the past and stuff. And so even that, like he was much more assertive than maybe some fives would be, but he still, the feelings were very five-ish.
Aw, that's really cool. And I love that you're helping fives listening or those married to fives to know, like, the 8 and the 3 make him a little different, but he's still very 5. And so you do deal with those typical issues, which is, you know, we're going to really step into in a minute, but thank you for sharing your fun story. What do you think really attracted you to him first?
You know, I think being in the Bible college, the little bubble, it was probably just this is going to sound like a very stereotypical answer, but just the intellect side of things or even the wisdom. It's not like he comes off as this super nerdy, brainy guy, but he knows and he really digs and finds, you know, the answers if he doesn't have them naturally. And so I just love that because it kind of feeds into my wanting to be right. And so we can really kind of like hone each other and sharpen each other.
And that is funny that you say that, because I noticed that with a lot of fives is they come off very unassuming. And then there's this well underneath resource that isn't always seen. And they're not always pegged as being super intellectual. But then when you get to know it, you're like, whoa, you are super intelligent. So I love that you saw that you dug for it a little bit. And there it was. And tell us a little bit about your 1-5 glow, because you're telling us there's some nuances to this pairing.
There is. I mean, you know, I read over your 1-5 glow PDF. I actually loved how that was put out. I was very happy to read through it. But yeah, like you used all these words like logical and hardworking and precise. We keep things in moderation, you know, outside of when we're stressed, then things kind of go a little bit on the splurgy side, but overall we're moderate people. And even just the advice giver side of things. I mean, you titled us classically brilliant, which I think totally fits my husband.
Aww.
I think I, as a 1, feel like there's no way I'm that brilliant to deserve that title, but.
Oh no, you guys are just beaming bright together. Absolutely. You deserve it.
It's a, It is a very well-fitting glow title, though. The wisdom side of things and the logical side of things, I joke all the time. And people don't understand it, I think, because we're both very not feely types. And so they don't understand when I explain that we have dialogues about issues or problems that we're working through and stuff like 2 consulting doctors. You know, we're comparing notes and you're taking a walk and trying to analyze things. And people are like, that seems odd. There's feelings there, of course, but they're not like you would expect
at the top.
Most couples. they're way down there. We're trying to deal with the problem. Yeah. But it really comes through, you know, when we're trying to help others, which you kind of brought out about being the advice givers. Obviously, my husband does it, you know, from the pulpit, but obviously in counseling sessions and stuff. And then I do it through my Enneagram work. And then since I'm a mom, I help moms either, you know, with parenting tips or homeschooling their kids. And then occasionally we get to team up together. And usually it's pre-marriage counseling or marriage counseling. And he'll bring the biblical side of things and I'll bring the Enneagram side of things. And that's just really fun because, you know, we can both see each other's best like teaching traits. Like I love him being able to see all the like cool Enneagram things I can bring to the table and then see him in work, because I'll hear his bits and pieces, but I rarely get to actually see him in that kind of personal work anyways that you would get in a counseling session. So it's a lot of fun.
Ooh, that is a lot of fun. I love hearing how you guys keep your emotions at bay so you can work things out logically. And I love that you respect each other. That's a word that keeps coming to my mind when I think about your pairing, is there's a lot of respect for how you manage and solve problems, because on your husband's side, being a five, he doesn't want to be overwhelmed by emotion and feel like you can't give him a break off emotion. And then you're probably feeling like, okay, good, that he's not going to get overly emotional when I logically ask him to do something better.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's definitely a long-term learning curve that we're still like fine tuning, you know, even just as the one, you know, I can come off as critical, especially if it's his personal area as a five where he should be competent and is competent. Like, you know, if it, I talk about church stuff, it can come off as this long list of critical things. And, you know, he's having to learn that I'm not just making this horrible evil list of these are all the areas you're ruining everything. It's these are all the areas that it can be better. We should do this so that, you know, the church is even better, or, you know, your session will go better because they're a type such and such. But there's, yeah, there's a little bit of a learning curve there with that. And there's a learning curve with me realizing, you know, just the other day, we kind of got into a fight because I was upset that I had all these emotions I needed to deal with. And he was being very logical, which is fine. And it makes sense for me. But, you know, at one point he kind of taps out and, you know, he just opens his laptop and starts doing his stuff. And, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been totally livid over that. And now I'm just realizing in the back of my head, okay, he's had enough of the emotions. He has to take a break. He's getting overwhelmed. He's got to stop for a bit. And he's always really good about eventually coming back. And, you know, even if it's half an hour or 2 hours later, you know, he'll come back with either an explanation or more details to, you know, explain things better, which is good because honestly, I probably need the extra time anyways to sort out my own emotions, because that can take a while for me to dig four as a one, because I like to suppress and repress my emotions, at least the bad ones.
Right. So you're able to go, okay, this is really hard in the moment, but a long-term game, now that you've been doing it for 10 years plus, you're going, okay, I can see how this actually works, because I need some time and thought and I need to sort things out. And he's overstimulated, overwhelmed, flooded. So that's a good word for those married to fives or ones, is give them some time. And I do think that's something you guys can do, is if you're unhappy, you can let it sit without running in. How, you know, some of us more aggressive types do. Is that true?
Yeah, I really do. Like, I'm sure there's nuances on certain types, especially, you know, if you're a more feely one, I feel like they're a little bit more inclined to need things hashed out quicker. But overall, I think, yeah, we can let things sit for a little bit. There is a tendency for both of us to keep things in that are annoying or bothering us for so long that eventually we just snap, especially me. I think my husband, either he has a longer range or he doesn't snap as much as me, but I'll hold things in that are bothering me so much. And it's almost always rooted in the, this is right. I suck it up because he's having a hard time and he doesn't need more of this from me. And, you know, I'll try and do the good, right wife thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the small things, that's fine, but eventually things add up. And I have to realize that the right thing actually would have been to clue him in earlier before I break and I melt down. And now he has this big wife problem instead of a tiny wife problem.
Aw, and that is just so beautiful for you to consider him first when you're going through your mind. And I want our listeners to hear that and note that she just said something important that she does, but yet you're also saying, Brittany, like, but I do it for too long. Like, maybe I should be like that for a day or two, but like, an hour or two, but like, you're like, now I'm blowing up at him and that's not good either.
Right.
And when a five, well, before I ask this, what is your subtype or your stacking order so that the listeners can relate?
Yeah. So I am a social dominantly. So I'm a social self-prez is my second. And my husband, we actually haven't pegged down his subtype. You know, you would think I would know being an Enneagram coach, but he's hard to peg down, especially I think in the sense that, you know, you'll read all these different types and it's, I can see parts of him in all of them. Pretty sure social is his blind spot. That seems pretty obvious because that is actually where especially like this last year, we've had a lot of conflict come up is because I'm dominant in what he is not on his radar at all. And so, you know, he'll be ready to leave a party and he's like, yeah, I cleared it with them. They're fine with us leaving. I'm like, but this is your sister's wedding. We need to be here to help clean up. Even though they said it was okay, we should be here. So that's been an interesting newer revelation for us, is realizing that even those dynamics can cause us conflict, where I'm dominant and he's in his blind spot, and probably vice versa. Cause I think sexual is probably his secondary type. I think he's probably self-pres and then sexual. But sexual is my blind spot. And so, you know, he's much more wanting to connect and be intimate as much as a five does. And yeah, and that's like the last thing on my radar. You know, I've got a long laundry list of things to do. I'm like, okay, we can just sit in the couch and chill. But like,
yeah,
that's all I got the bandwidth for. I have all these other things to do. Intimacy, I don't really need that much. So let's just keep chugging along. About it, but occasionally he's like, you know, like I'm tired of being the one always doing everything, and it's like, oh you're right, you shouldn't be the one doing everything,
right? So I love that you're aware of it, and I think that, like, sometimes that's as good as it gets. Like, we're not trying to scare young marrieds off, but like, be aware of it and then baby step toward it, because it's still hard, even knowing and being coaches. Sometimes you're like, yep, I saw myself do that, and you're not past that yet.
Just the awareness is so key, because you're right. Like, there's so many things that I can't even now change about the way I am and how I do things, especially because for me, it would feel hypocritical. Like, I'm trying to fake it and I can't do that as a one. But just the awareness, and little by little through the years, you know, I'm picking up tiny pieces that, you know, most people would not even take a look at because they're so small. But the awareness just gives so much more grace to the situation.
Yeah, it does. And it's like, there's an awareness to your spouse too, where now you can say, I'm sorry I get stuck here. And that's so different from before you really do your Enneagram work. And some people do this without Enneagram. They just are awesome at working on themselves. But I really liked having this tool. So that is fascinating. And I know I could ask Brittany all day questions about her glow. I just want to transition though, because she has so much wisdom to share with us, as I already told you guys. And I hope you know it, because I hope that even as you're listening, that you've scrolled off a little bit to her Instagram page, because she's got this amazing account. But come back to us now if you've scrolled off, because now we're going to talk about something very important. She's going to teach us about the harmonic groups of the Enneagram. And a lot of you aren't familiar with this, so I'm super excited to dig in. It's going to help us in our conflict styles better. So can you tell us a little bit about that, Brittany?
Yeah. So one of the key parts of the Enneagram that I love to tell married people, I mean, it's good for any relationship, but especially married people, is about harmonic groups, which is the Enneagram put in the groups to explain how we handle conflict. A triadic group. So there are three groups, and you'll find three Enneagram types in each group. But marriage comes with conflict. Yes. And knowing how each of you handle the conflict can give you grace for your spouse while you're in that conflict, and knowledge about your own tendencies so that you can keep them perspective.
Huge.
Otherwise, you know, you'll just keep going on your own rut and keep getting upset with each other for being themselves. Yeah. So the conflict styles, I think, are such a huge eye opener in marriage work. Like I said, there are three, and traditionally they're called harmonic groups, but they're based on the conflict. They're based on how each type handles conflict, or they approach conflict to, you know, deal with it. The three types are the competency group, the positive outlook group, and the reactive group. Although the reactive group, they get a multitude of names so that they can all be happy depending on which they like. So they can be the reactive group. They're also known as the emotional realness group, or sometimes the intensity group. And I think as I explain which types are in there, you can probably realize, like, there's probably certain types that prefer one of those.
Yes, I can. I'm already thinking about eights. Can we call this passionate? I don't, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, or passion. Yeah, like it, The same idea, but different titles. It's all semantics on that one. But yeah, so I'll just kind of work through the different groups.
Perfect.
So the first group I'll go through is actually mine. The ones, threes, and fives are all in the competency group. Mm-hmm. And while they have slight nuances on how they handle the conflict, mm-hmm. they all share in the same similarity that they either repress emotions or they detach from emotions and feelings in order to build the conflict in an orderly and timely manner. So I think we kind of even hinted that before in the beginning of this podcast, where we'll lay aside the feelings so that we can solve our problem or what we're working through very quickly and efficiently and logically.
You and your hubby are both in this group.
We are both in this triad, which I actually think is a great blessing, because it means we at least kind of see eye to eye on conflict.
It is nice.
We obviously have our different nuanced ways, but we're not really butting heads, because we're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Squash the emotions and plow on through and just solve it. So it works really well for us. But obviously, like, you can see, like, if your spouse was not a competency, that's going to cause some issues, because they want the feelings, and, you know, a competency type does not want the feelings. They just cloud things and slow it down. So knowing that can be really, really insightful on understanding the differences on how you're handling this conflict, because you're not necessarily handling them badly. You're just handling them differently. So that is really, really helpful to just keep in mind. A lot harder to keep in mind during conflict, unless you're really like reviewing it and trying to cement it in your brain, which is why I usually try and tell married couples to really learn their spouse's, you know, type and their conflict groups and all these different things, because in the heat of the moment, you're going to forget. But the more you keep being aware of it and learning it, the more you'll be able to remember while you're having a fight and be like, oh yeah, they're that group. They're not being mean to me. They don't hate me. They don't care. It's just, they're different.
Wow. No, that makes sense. And so you're saying they want to be competent, though, if they're in this group. This is the most important thing when they're having conflict, is that they're seen as a competent individual.
Right. Yeah.
Good to know.
And even just, you know, we all, the ones, threes, and fives, we don't necessarily love dealing with the feelings either. And so it allows us, in the negative side of things, to ignore the feelings and not have to deal with the feeling work. And solve it easily, so it doesn't hurt us as much. So as we kind of go through these, you'll realize there's very much a pro side and a con side to how you handle your conflict. So the competency, you know, we get the job done, but we might be lacking in the feeling and actually like the deeper, harder work that should be going on at the same time. At least that is the tendency or the default.
Okay. So this group might miss some of the bigger things.
Right. Sometimes. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Some of the big picture, because you're going kind of line by line through the details.
Yeah. Or even just the, you know, the more relational side of things. You know, it's not too bad if you're dealing with another competency type, but if you're dealing with somebody who's not, they can feel just, you know, bulldozed over, or like they don't matter, or even, you know, well, you solved the problem, but I'm still really, really hurt. Why wasn't that a big deal to you? And they're like, well, it was, but we just solved it instead.
Yes. And I envy those in the competency group for this reason.
Yeah. It's a good group to be. Like I said, I'm really glad I'm married to my husband, just because we understand the same wavelength there of like, okay, we're not stepping on each other's toes, because this is how we both are.
Yeah. Why is this reminding me of the Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson group? And this is like the one that they're saying, it's just that's a whole other conversation. So go ahead and reveal some more.
I'm definitely biased to that group, but obviously that's because it's my group. Yes. But I'll go into the other groups so you guys can actually understand the other ones too.
Okay, perfect.
So 4, 6, 8s are all in our reactive group, or like I said, they can be called the emotional realness group or the intensity group. You can kind of see, like, I initially want to say intensity group for 8s. Even reactive can kind of carry that slightly negative connotation. And so even emotional realness can feel like a more acceptable answer.
Yeah, I like that.
But generally the idea is they're all going to be approaching conflict with strong reactions. They'll all have their own nuance, obviously, because 4, 6s, and 8s are pretty different from each other, especially in the reactions. But internally, at least, if not verbally saying it, they're the type that are going to think, this is a big deal to me. Why isn't it a big deal to you? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like even right there, you can see mm-hmm. that's not going to work if you're dealing with a competency type, because mm-hmm. it is a big deal, but it's not emotionally a big deal to a competent
type. Exactly, yes.
So mm-hmm. they're going to feel like you don't care if you're not reacting to this. Mm-hmm. And so just even keeping that in mind, you know, can really help mm-hmm. both spouses get through a conflict of understanding mm-hmm. that, okay, reactions and big emotions are really important to you to understand that I actually love you. I'm not naturally that way. So I need to, mm-hmm. you know, show that this is hard for me, or I am hurt or whatever, even if I am defaulting to, you know, being competent or something. Mm-hmm. In the same way, you know, the reactive type can understand that it's not that they don't care. It's just they care differently.
Ooh, that's a great way of seeing it. Yes. Wow. That's huge. That is revolutionary. If you can start thinking about your marriage like that, it's not that they don't care. It's that they care differently.
Yeah. Which I think is the great thing about the Enneagram is everybody has kind of that same level of care, you know, and they're different levels, but they all care. It's just, we have 9 different ways of showing it, or 9 different ways of handling things. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like you just can't say, well, you don't care about this, or, mm-hmm. you know, they might care maybe slightly less than you, but that doesn't mm-hmm. mean they don't care. And mm-hmm. it's not a big deal to them. It's just, they handle it different and they react to it different.
That makes so much sense. And I know that with people in that group, I do tend to move away a little bit and go toward my withdrawing stance sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I hear you when you say this group gets really frustrated when people don't seem to appreciate the bigness of what's happening. And so we just all have to be mindful of, as much as we may want to go into self-preserving mode or withdrawing, or in this case, the competency group, positive outlook group, we're going to need to remember this so that we have, like you said at the beginning, more compassion. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the last group.
Yes, your group. So 2s, 7s, and 9s mm-hmm. are all in the positive outlook group. Mm-hmm. Which it doesn't seem like that's very much of a surprise. I think if you know a 2, 7, or 9, they're quite positive people usually. Mm-hmm. And so they deal with conflict by focusing on the bright side of things, or they put mm-hmm. emphasis on the positives that they're either coming out of the conflict, like this is really hard, but we're going to be better out of it, you know, that kind of a thing, or mm-hmm. or the positives that they're bringing to it of, you know, especially with like the 2s, it can often be, you know, I'm bringing a lot to this table, even though this is a horrible conflict. Here are the good things that are coming out of it. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that's a great thing, because otherwise it'd be very doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. And so having those positives is a great, great thing. The downside mm-hmm. of it is they might ignore the actual problem or not dig deep enough, because, you know, you don't want to mm-hmm. deal with those negative, yucky feelings or problems, and you want to keep it happy and positive. And so, yeah, like you said, even with the reactive group, a positive outlook group, they might not love the reactive side, because it's bringing up all the negative or the hard and messy emotions. And they're going to be like, no, let's just think on the bright side of things and everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. And so that can get in the problem. Or, you know, if it's a positive outlook type with a competency type, the positive outlook is going to maybe not look at the details that the competency type wants to solve and get done. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh no, it's all right, it'll be okay. And the, mm-hmm. you know, the competency is like, no, we got to do this and this and this. And they mm-hmm. don't want to have to do this and this and this. They want to just, you know, keep it okay and positive.
Right, exactly. And we can really miss things by keeping it light. Mm-hmm. As you said, those important details, or we can really forget to react big because we're just going, okay, then I'll go away because I'm a 9, or I'll find the bright side because I'm a 2 or a 7. And it's just missing the depths. So the problem solving, the positive outlook group misses the competency group and they miss the reactivity group both. So is it kind of the goal with these that we want to hit all of them?
That was my next point. Cool. You know, first level of understanding harmonic groups or your conflict style is just understanding you and your spouse's type, so that you can kind of keep it in the back of your mind while you're dealing with the conflict. Mm-hmm. But the next step would be to learn how to incorporate all 3 of those groups into the way you handle it, because each of the types, like I said, has their positives, but they also come with a downside to them. And so to holistically handle your conflict, you'd want to be competent and still have the emotions of a reactive group and still have the positive outlook side so that things aren't, like I said, doom and gloom. You want all three of those so that the conflict can be fully.
Yes. And earlier today, we were saying the awareness is part of it. Mm-hmm. Is that the main tip for people, is be aware and try to balance? Or do you think there's really specific tips like writing this down or remembering it in a specific way or taking deep breaths? What do you usually recommend when people are kind of just at that beginning phase of, I want to do this differently. How can I remember how?
I think that probably would depend on the type of people. I know there are the types who love, you know, sticky notes so that they have that visual constant reminder. I hate clutter, so I can't do that. there are the other types who they can really remember things, you know, like a 5 or a 1 or some of these other heady types, that just doing a deep dive into understanding their spouses or their own types and, you know, reading all the books and watching all the podcast or all the videos and podcasts, cemented in through all of those different learning ways. Obviously doing your own growth work will really give you that tangible connection of, you know, taking your last conflict and seeing how you handled it and maybe where you guys disconnected a little bit and things seemed to go wrong, even though, you know, in hindsight, it didn't seem like that big of a deal. Why did you guys go off course? Or even looking at how your spouse seems to handle conflict all the time. And just being able to, you know, the more you dissect those things, the more it'll be obvious the next time you see them, you know, just like, hey, it feels very sciencey, but the more you notice the tendencies of this in nature, you'll notice it instantly when you see it again somewhere else. And so just, yeah, the kind of constantly going over, really being aware of, I think I said this in the beginning, but just the more you really look into it, because, you know, one time reading, it's probably not going to stick with you, especially in the heat of a conflict. Our defense mechanisms kick in way too strongly for us to remember, oh, what about the other person? How do they handle this? How are they reacting to how I'm handling it? The defense mechanisms just take over way too fast. And so the more you kind of train yourself, the more likely you're going to at least be in the back of your mind remembering, okay, this is how I'm handling it. This is how I actually want to handle it, but my spouse needs something else. Or my spouse reacts better to something else.
That's true. And it's going to help you to not reframe it as my spouse doesn't care if they're the positive outlook group or the competency group. And then if your spouse is the reactivity group, it's going to help you not to say, oh, they're just too controlling. Instead, you'll be able to say, okay, this is their way of dealing and they're trying to solve it. And that they're bringing this intensity or this logic or this positivity, because these are all great and important elements. But we have to sift out together. And I think it's helpful when couples go to a place like your husband and you for help, because a lot of the time what I've noticed couples do in sessions is they want to hash out an argument they've already had. And that's very important to their process for moving forward. And sometimes it irritates one of the spouses because they're like, we were already here. But then they're like, well, why are we paying this person if we're just going to have fun? So they go through and they want to hash it out. And exactly what you're saying reminds me of that, because they need to do that so that they can move forward well to say, wait, what did we miss last time? And so that's an important way. Yes, we need our John Gottman tips and we need to be communicative and good listeners, but also to listen with this lens of the harmonic groups. That's why I wanted to have Brittany on, so she could help us with this blind spot that I think a lot of us have with the Enneagram. Because
in terms of Enneagram, I think the harmonic groups, all the more nuancey groups, we don't talk about them as often, but they are. They're so helpful in especially these more relational.
Thank you.
Areas.
Yes. You've got great info on it. And that's probably why your account is called Enneagram Explained, right?
It is. Yeah. That, that was my husband's title, but it's very much, my style of explain. I've even realized, like, I've been doing this for about over 2 years, I guess now. And I've realized I'm not so much the type of coach who wants to have tons of face-to-face coaching sessions, mainly because I'm actually really introverted and I feel like it would take me a long time to actually understand somebody enough to really coach them. But it is so much my wheelhouse of explaining it out and putting it out there so people can read for themselves, and having physical blog posts and stuff so that they can actually find all this information. It's out there. You have to dig through all the books and stuff, but in this day and age, lots of people would rather have something on the internet or something even quick and fun like Instagram. Not that my Instagram is a mostly intellectual side with occasional fun quote series, just to keep it slightly light.
Oh, I love that. Safety is so important to me. So when I can safely say she knows what she's talking about, she catches details. It's a really big gift. So I love that you add that to the table, and you have a very successful account. So I know our listeners are going to learn a lot from you. And what do you think, as far as, just because this is such your wheelhouse, that people really do, and I don't mean this rude, this is a very one question, but what do you think people do wrong with the Enneagram? Because I think we do our best, and I'm not judging anybody, but what are some things that are cautionary tales for people doing their Enneagram work?
Good question. So I think I'm going to have to go with two. The first one's much simpler, although harder to do, is just to not use your type as a defense for the way you are. You know, I just do this because I'm a one, or I can't handle not doing it properly because I'm a one. You know, it's sure that might be why you can't handle it, but that doesn't mean you're pigeonholed to that. You have to actually, I mean, the Enneagram is almost focuses on your flaws in your type so that you have a reason to grow. If it was all just, this is how you are, and this is all the good stuff, we would never want to grow, and we would just be all stuck in our nine little numbers. So I do actually like, even though that's hard for people, is that the Enneagram almost focuses on just the negatives. It balances it out with the positives, but it seems to like to communicate the downsides of our type.
It so does. That I've we heard have Beatrice a reason. Chestnut say that too. That's funny really? That you say that. Yes.
So funny. Yeah. So that's one of the biggest ones, especially with how the Enneagram is kind of getting trendy. It can be very easy to be like, oh yeah, that's what I am. And just, that's it. They have their number and they're never going to bother doing the growth work, but the growth work is essential and so good when you actually start incorporating it. So that's one of the big things I see that's going wrong. But the other one that isn't necessarily wrong, but something I find people have a hard time when they're trying to find their type, is they get so hung up in the traits or the descriptions even of their type, the nine types while they're trying to find their type, that they don't actually understand that your type is determined by your motivation, because you can be any type perfectionist, or you can be a creative type who isn't a type four.
Wow. Yes.
Or, you know, you could actually be an extroverted five. You know, they're rare, but they do exist. And so if you disqualify being a five just because you're extroverted, you're going to actually miss properly typing yourself. And so, you know, the tests are great because they kind of help narrow things down, but they aren't foolproof because they're kind of trait based. And honestly, I think that's probably just because we don't have a great way of testing motivations. It's a little bit harder to do, especially over a computer. That's why it's better to just take the top few scores from a test and really kind of like deep dive into the motivations of those types and see which one is actually at the root of everything that you're doing. Or if you have a few, you know, which one might be the surface level motivation and which one is actually the root of everything. Or sometimes one kind of even feeds into the other. Like I was telling somebody the other day, I'm a one wing nine. And so I can't be right, or I can't be at peace unless I'm right. And so that nine wing can't even happen if I don't have my one's desire. Whereas the opposite is not true. I can't be at peace if I'm not right. I have to have that ultimate core one. Being at peace is great, but I'd much rather be right than at peace with other people and stuff. If I don't have the right, I'm not a one. I have to have that in there. Whereas obviously, you know, the other types are like, well, being right's nice, but this is essential to me. And so you sometimes have to dig really deep. I mean, I mistyped as a type six before, especially because my dad was a type six and he ingrained a lot of it on me. It's in my tri-type. So that took a lot of digging to realize that safety and security and support is really important to me, but it's important because I want to get things right. So like I need to be well prepared and think of all the worst case scenarios, but it's because I need to get things right if and when they do happen, not so that I can feel safe. I have to get it right. And so that was the like difference there for me between I'm not a six, because that wasn't the ultimate goal. It was being right.
Ooh, that's so helpful for people who are on the fence. And this might even be revolutionary as you talk so creatively about wings too. I love this. Thank you so much for sharing that there are so many nuances to finding your type. And I love how you gift people with that reminder of sorting through your top three types and then looking at your wings carefully, but understanding which is dominant. And then, like you said, the core motivations, which I noticed you have on your EnneagramExplained.com as well. So they can find this information at Instagram or there, which is awesome. Yeah. What do you feel like you have as we close for couples who might be so similarly wired to you with the one gifting or one wing nine, or even one wing twos are similar enough, and the five pairing? Is there anything that you think, gosh, if I could have known this 5 or 10 years ago, I would have loved to know this?
Oh goodness. I mean, there's so many like the minor details of traits, like knowing that my husband's not selfish when he has to go recharge and it's actually essential for him to be a part of our family life. Yes. You know, that took a while to learn. Those kind of trait differences, I think, was really, it would have been good to know, you know, 15 years ago. But I think the one thing that I really love that we're learning to use each other's talents for bettering ourselves or helping ourselves is our stances, which I feel like you might have a podcast on this about, but this is a whole nother deep dive. This would be good.
So much fun. Yeah, go ahead.
So I, as a one, am thinking repressed, which does not mean I don't think, but I just, I think in black and white, and it gets very hamster wheel-like where I'm stuck on that. Whereas my husband is in the thinking triad, so he is thinking dominant. And so we've realized that, especially like this last season of COVID and everything, taking a walk with him and processing things verbally with him while he is bringing his logic into things and helping me see that there's another way off of the hamster wheel has been so helpful for me, just in terms of not getting stuck in that black and white, but also it's given me a lot more access to the gray, because as a one, gray does not exist in my world. Everything has to be black or white. And just even that has been, I feel like I've grown by leaps and bounds through that. But the 1-5 pairing is really unique in the fact that I am doing dominant, being in the, you know, the doing gut triad, and he is doing repressed, which doesn't mean he doesn't do anything. It just means he tends to think and research and, you know, try and get as much knowledge into him so he can be capable. And then eventually he might finally do, but he could have done everything earlier. Or like the funny example I give is, you know, he talked about getting a schedule for himself for like a year. Like, he, you know, if I just got a schedule, I could, you know, have more time to do everything and I get it done. I'm like, he spent a year telling me that on and off. And finally, I'm like, can I just do it for you? And, you know, I cranked it out in like 2 days and he had it all there. It was all colorful. And, you know, it was just, I was able to get it done for him. You know, I couldn't do everything for him, but certain like menial tasks, or even just helping him realize, okay, you've prepared for your sermon for like 2 weeks and he'll feel like he needs, you know, just some more. And to be fair, his sermon will probably be better if he has just some more, but he's also super surprised every time where he realizes I had enough. Like, this actually was enough to do a really good job. I didn't have to keep preparing. And so there's been a lot of learning on both sides of those, of leaning into each other's strengths and being each other's training wheels, so that hopefully we can do this on our own, but our spouse can be our training wheels while we're learning it.
My gosh. And I think your reach is so much farther and brighter when you do it together. That's just awesome. Wow. Well, thank you so much. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you? Because I know now everybody's like, I want more info. Like, we're all in our five world. And so, and you even said earlier, you're like, I can be very five-ish and I can see that about you. So tell us, where we can find you.
Yeah. So most of my constant posting, my daily posting, is on Instagram. So you can find me at Enneagram Explained. But I also have a website, because I wanted something permanent that people could find the long form with a little bit more details, or they can pin it so they can keep track of it. And so that's the website, which is just enneagramexplained.com. And like you mentioned, you know, I've got a post on core motivations. I've got a post on how to confirm your type. I've got a post on the harmonic groups so that they can find all the actual details there too. All the big important ones I've made sure to get on there. It's still growing, but.
Well, I noticed that and I loved it. And I'm going to just squirrel off and say she's also got harmony groups and all these things I shouldn't say to confuse people. But as a seven, that I have to be excited and enthusiastic for all of the info that's there for you guys and my little five corner of my mind telling you, like, go research. She knows it all. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. This has been amazing.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I hope we get to do it again sometime.
Definitely.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. That was really refreshing to hear from Brittany about things that can be very confusing for people just learning the Enneagram. And sometimes they take it for granted that people are stepping onto this podcast having listened to all of the previous podcasts, and they haven't. And one thing I love about the way Brittany runs her account is that she continues to cycle through the most important elements of the Enneagram. If you need a refresher, and let's just be honest that as much as we want to do our tri-type work and we want to do our wing work and our even our arrow work, the most important things are learning about our actual type and just trying to work on the health and the passions and the fixations of that type. So Brittany brings you to all of this, including the harmonic groups that we got to learn about today for relationship conflict. But she brings us back to the most important lessons again and again and again. So that's why we need more than one personality type out there. And that's why we need her for sure. And how fun to hear that her husband helped her to come up with the name of her account and that the two of them together are really good at explaining, sharing wisdom with others. Thank you to all the 1-5s out there for doing this with us. And we're so glad you have one another to find respite in. I hope that you guys who are interested in learning more about Enneagram and relationship work will step into my course with me. You can visit enneagramandmarriage.com. We're at the fun place where I'm getting to know course members, and yet you still have through May 13th to join. How fun to be able to get to work with others who are passionate about helping couples in their churches, in their home lives, or in their practices. So join us at enneagramandmarriage.com to hear more details or to sign up. And I so look forward to hearing how you liked this 1-5 glow pairing episode. Really, really cool to have Brittany and all of her expertise. I so appreciate the way she refines the world. Talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.